Hi, this is Gavin from FE News. I'm here at the AOC 2019 Annual Conference. I think this must be my 15th Association of Colleges Annual Conference. So join me as I chat with the main speakers from the stage, some interesting people from the breakouts, and some interesting people in the audience around the latest news and views from AOC 2019. So this is Gavin from FE News. I'm here with Kath from AOC. We're at the AOC Annual Conference 2019.
Hi, Gav. Nice to see you this morning. So hello, everyone. My name's Catherine Cezanne. I'm a Senior Policy Manager at the Association of Colleges, where I focus on T-levels, English and Maths, and careers.
So, Kath, can you give us an update as to where we're at with T-levels right now and this new exciting stage we're going to be going into next?
So T-levels are very much becoming a reality right now. So the 50 2020 providers will be delivering the first three T-levels from next September. So they're very much at the moment looking at the curriculum design, the curriculum planning, their recruitment, how they ensure that they're getting the students onto courses and making sure it's appropriate for the young people coming in. They are looking at how they get how they put it all together. So it's like a big jigsaw, isn't it? And it's quite different from other programs because obviously it's got the industry placement involved, and it's a much more substantial course. So it's going to be 50% larger than the current courses. So that's what they're looking at the moment.
And what do you see to be the main challenges on this next stage of the curriculum design planning for people to be able to deliver this?
So I think for the college providers, what they're looking for now is getting the confirmed specification, so they know the assessment that the students are working towards and what exactly they've got to cover. Obviously, they are able to see drafts. They're working closely with the awarding organisations, but actually you want that in your hands. And then looking at the staffing, does this mean it's going to be a change of staffing, that you might need staff with particular specialisms? And also planning, I suppose, not just for the first year, but how you back-to-back first year and second year, because obviously it is a two-year programme. And with the industry placement, how you manage that with students going out, are you looking at block placement, are you looking at one day a week, or a bit of a mixture of both, and meeting the needs of employers?
And you mentioned it twice, and it's been the sort of the burning question that everyone's asking about, really, is the industry placement. What sort of ideas have been sort of floated around to, A, encourage employers to offer the industry placements, but also best practice on how to deliver that? Because there's got to be some sectors where it's going to be easier to deliver industry placement compared to others. So what's been the current sort of thought process around enabling industry placements? It's such an integral part of the T-level.
So actually there's a lot of work going on at the moment in terms of engaging with employers. So the Department for Education has got a project running this year through SDN and the Learning and Work Institute. And what they're looking at is how best to engage with employers, how best to prepare employers, to allay the fears that some employers have, looking at how we can engage with not only the small to medium-sized employers that a lot of college providers already work with, but also some of the very large corporates. And I know from meeting some of the large corporates last week that actually the pitch has to be quite different. And so it's... How you can engage and talk to them about looking at their corporate social responsibility, allaying their fears about the fact that they seem to think that perhaps a student was just going to turn up on the day. And that's not at all what we're looking at. So previous projects run by AOC and The Challenge have looked at the importance of preparing the student before they go on placement, supporting and monitoring the student while on placement, and then that reflection after placement. So it's, I think, reassuring employers that they're not going to be on their own, but how much the young people on a T-level could really add to their business. So they might be able to complete a project that they haven't necessarily had the capacity to do themselves. It also enables them to see young people in action and possibly look at how they could then recruit them full-time post-T level. So I think there are lots of opportunities, but I suppose one of the big questions at the moment is how we actually bring in more employers so that we've got enough placements, and not necessarily for 2020 or even 2021, but by the time we get to steady state in 2025, we're going to need a lot of employers on board, because it's not just T-levels, obviously. We've also got the transition programme that needs work experience. We've got other programmes that need work experience. We're asking employers to be involved in apprenticeships, obviously, already, and also to do mentoring, guest speaker slots, site visits. So actually, it's trying to work out that package and help employers to find their way through it as well.
And another thing which seems to be a challenge and an opportunity is the careers advice and guidance on the lead in to T levels, but also on the outcome after T levels. So could you sort of explain a little bit of the thought process, what's gone around it? Because I know there's been a lot.
So for me, information, advice and guidance is absolutely crucial to this change agenda. So how we engage young people in technical education when currently Key Stage 4 is quite academic and EBAC focused. So enabling young people to understand about the opportunities that there are out there, to all the occupations. So we know that T levels are based on occupational clusters. And when you look at those occupational maps, there are jobs there I've never even heard of. So if I've not heard of them, you can guarantee that a lot of young people haven't heard of them either. And I think there needs to be much more specific information, advice and guidance about if you're doing these qualifications, it could lead to these opportunities. And also embed it so that it excites young people, so they know more about it. So if we look at other countries, so for example, Switzerland. In Switzerland, they really embed careers information, advice and guidance very early on, from the beginning of secondary. And I think that's what we need to be doing, so that it becomes much more relevant to young people. So just to give an example, my son and I met someone in our town. We live on the coast. He was a bit lost, and he explained he was looking for a particular hotel, so we sort of showed him where it was, and we asked him what he was doing in Worthing. And he's come from Greece, and he was going to be working on the wind farm. So we have a wind farm just off the coast where we are. And my son, who's never been particularly interested in anything to do with engineering, was just really interested in what this guy was going to be doing to do with the wind farm, and started asking him questions. So I think it's that type of thing, really, getting people to think about what those opportunities are. And we know that as we go forward, you know, wind farms are just one example. 15 years ago, there were no wind farms. So we're going to need people with different skills going forward. And how best do we really engage with our young people so that they can see what those opportunities are?
Time of year of the conference of AOC is always really close to World Skills, UK Live! How can we utilise a joined up approach for the sector, for a lot of what is outreach to people to understand their different career options? Is there an opportunity to be able to showcase different career routes via the T-level route? And also on the output from T-levels, has there been exploratory thought about what the outcomes could be from looking at, because T-levels explore a wide range of skills and expertise. So is there a way that the sector's been thinking already about the system? You know, how can we get people into that next stage and those stackable qualifications and, you know, being with them through their career?
So to start with your final question there, Gav, I think, obviously, the department are looking at the higher technical qualifications, so qualifications at levels 4 and 5. And what we know is that that's where the gaps are. So we've got lots of young people currently who go on to straight on to level 6 at university, which is great. But we need as many, if not more, young people to go on to do qualifications at levels 4 and 5, because those are where the gaps are. And at the moment, what happens is that young people often do a level 6 qualification and then slot backwards. So it just seems a bit more sensible to go up the ladder rather than up and down, up and down. So I think that's really important. And I know that that will be important in terms of recruitment into T levels, because young people and parents, carers want to know what you can progress onto. So I think that's really important. I think in terms of world skills, it's also about how we compete internationally and productivity. So whatever happens in terms of where we're going politically in the next few weeks, months, years, actually we know that we have those skills gaps, and actually we need to be looking to other countries. We need to be encouraging young people to achieve in technical skills in just the same way that we all get excited about young people doing well in A-levels and going on to good universities. We need to have that same vibe, that same feel about technical education. And actually, if you go to other countries, so Switzerland again, or Austria, Finland, that's what you see. You see that technical education, Germany, another great example, technical education has that parity. And is considered to be a really good career choice. And I think going back to that information, advice and guidance in schools as well, it's actually embedding that attitude that it's good to go into technical, and we need it, because in the future, where are the people, you know, domestically, where are the people who are going to be our plumbers and our electricians? Where are the people who are going to build our infrastructure, design our infrastructure? Where are the people who are going to ensure that we have the media opportunities, the cameramen? You know, you see these programs, you see, you know, the David Attenborough programs, you see all the, you know, the sort of camera people and things like that. So it's as you say, it's such a wide range of skills that we're going to need going forward. And there is also, I think, needs to be more of a focus on the sort of softer skills around that as well, the importance of teamwork and communication, effective use of language, looking at how maths can be used in different ways, looking at data, for example. All of those things are really important for preparing young people to go out into work, but also for life. So resilience, dealing with knockbacks, and how to go forward, and also because we know that young people will probably have a variety of different careers as they go forward. Even if they're working in one industry, they may start doing something which is quite occupationally specific, but then they may go on to a managerial role, they may become a senior manager, so you need to know how to work with people as well. So I think it's a really exciting time that we're in, exciting times. Preparing for T-levels for next September, there's quite a lot of pressure on those providers because they also have the day job to deal with as well. But I feel very confident. We've had a lot of feedback from colleges that they've had a lot of interest in T-levels from young people and their parents and carers. So I suppose what we need to see now is that reality. We need to get those specifications, and we need to make it real for our young people, because that's the most important thing.
And I've just got one final question, which that's all fantastic, and it's you already answered my other question I was going to ask around, you know, qualification brand to parents and carers, because, you know, people understand what a GCSE is. It's been around for a while now. Mm. So that's great. There's been some thought into that. You mentioned like plumbers and, you know, jobs of the future, and there's a debate, particularly on social media, around that in some areas that we're now producing too many qualifications and roles for, say, plumbers, for example, where there's no longer that sort of skills gap. Is there plans, is there things in place which is like using data and labour market information to meet needs and to see where, if we are putting people for a two-year course, that there is a career route in their region or in nationally?
So that's a really interesting question. And for me personally, the jury's out a little bit on that, because you could actually limit career opportunities if you said that you were only going to base your courses on exactly what was done in your own region. So the big skills gap where I live, for example, on the South Coast, would be working in social care, for example. But not everybody wants to work in social care. We need to encourage more people possibly to do it, but that's not what everybody wants to do. However, the department and colleges themselves are very well aware of the importance of LMI data. So I think the thing is being transparent with our young people as well, and talking to them about the opportunities that they can find locally, regionally, nationally, and even internationally. Because when we're talking about young people going on and doing A-levels, we don't limit those horizons. So I think it's important that we don't limit the horizons and aspirations of young people doing technical education as well. But it's very much in the plan about working towards having informed information, advice and guidance for young people. The department are also looking at working with the LEPs and having skills advisory panels. So in those skills advisory panels, they will be looking at where the opportunities are. So for example, if you've got a big building project, you've got a big infrastructure project going on, what are the skills that you're going to need in your local, in your particular local area? But as I say, I think it's important as well that we don't limit opportunities to just where you live, because young people will have aspirations to move, others won't. And some young people find that they are moving, and that's something that when you're 17 may well be beyond your control. So I think to limit young people, it is not the right way forward, but it does have to be transparent. They need to know what you can do if you're going to live locally, but what those other opportunities are as well.
Kath, thank you. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Why not click subscribe so you can be informed when the latest next individual podcast or podcast mini series from FE News are going to be released.